Okay, Simon, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. And what do people normally wear?
Clothes.
Exactly. So now mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Clothes keep us warm, they look good, and if we go out without them, the neighbors will talk. So it's important to know how to get dressed. Here's how it's done. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole, or you have to start all over. If you're wearing a tie, it goes over, round, round, through, and pull tight. Tuck your shirt into your pants and zip up your fly. Socks go in first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops. The rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears.
I love bunnies.
Good to know. Now remember, spots don't go with stripes, socks don't go with sandals, and if you've tucked in your shirt, wear a belt. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
It's halftime at UD Arena. Our halftime program today is being brought to you by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the studios for halftime.
As one of our halftimes, we like to talk with interesting people. There is nobody more interesting than Dan Burt. He was in town last year, late December, for a game for his Duquesne Dukes against the Dayton Flyers. And we're not going to specifically talk about that game because we're recording this before that game. So we're not going to be clairvoyant. But we're going to talk about a lot of things. Maybe we'll talk about you running marathon, too. I know we've covered that before, but maybe we'll go back to some archives. You are fascinating, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you a few names here. Orchi Seichi, Vanessa Abel, Nina Aho, Alex Gensler, and my favorite of all, Christy Little. You have, I think, it's 16 who have played professionally overseas. I'm not mentioning them all. How's the pipeline to do that? Not a lot of coaches can basically boast that sort of a list.
That list is now 27.
Oh, okay. That was old. Get that changed. It was 16.
Yeah.
But anyways, 27 and growing.
Yeah. We're really fortunate that because of my background and my wife's background of being a professional player and on the national team in Hungary, the man who is like a second father to her is one of the more prominent agents in Central Europe for men's basketball. And so both my wife and I learned a lot from him. And a gentleman that works for him is the most prominent European agent that works for Wasserman Group out of L.A. And so we've really learned the business of European basketball, and it's one of the advantages that we try to create when we're recruiting players, that not only do we have a lot of players go overseas, but we understand the different leagues that are involved and where is a place that is a good place for an American where they'll be supported and they'll feel comfortable. What we're really excited about this year is that in mid-February, we're going to have two of our former players in the Olympic qualifier. Fatou Poye is playing for the Senegalese senior national team, and Nina Aho is the point guard for the Hungarian national team. And they are both in qualifying pools that look like they're going to make the Olympics. And so we'll hopefully have one or two former Duquesne Dukes in the Olympics, and so that means I'll be in Paris, whether I'm sleeping on a park bench or wherever, I'll be there in Paris to watch them.
I speak fluent French, so if you need any lessons, let me know. Ah oui, très bien, monsieur. Oui.
Oh,
c'est une langue très magnifique.
Oh, la petite. La petite.
Où est le toilette? That's all you need to know. All right, now that we've lost our audience on that, so I guess the thing is, you know, they have so many choices. There's so many countries. How do you guide them? How do you help them determine where they're going to go play overseas? That's got to be a big project.
It's one of those things where you've got to find where the interest is with a particular club, and then who is the club's general manager, who is the club's coach. Things were a lot more interesting before the internet really came and YouTube. Now everything is online. You know, we try to push our kids to places where we know that there's basically an Americanized system to a certain degree. We always talk to our kids about, you know, they have to embrace the differences. There's the old Pulp Fiction story about Royale with cheese. If you've seen Pulp Fiction, you know, what I like to tell kids is, you know, you may go somewhere and you're going to have a coach who might be from Serbia and he's dating the point guard and smoking a cigarette on the sideline. you won't have that at the college level, but you may have that at the professional level, and you're going to have to learn how to deal with something like that. But, you know, we want to make sure that they go to places where they're going to be paid on time, and they're going to be paid, and where they're going to be valued. And we've done a really nice job of that. One of our Ohio kids from the past, Paige Cannon, this year is in Malta, and she is having an incredible experience in Malta, which is a really cool place for an American to go. And she's coming back for our Hall of Fame weekend. We're inducting our 2016 team that went to the NCAA tournament, and they've given her some time off to fly back to be a part of that.
Well, what about the language barrier? That would worry me if I were an American. And I know sometimes there are other Americans on the team, but what if do they sometimes think, well, how can I play for a coach if I can't understand what he or she says?
English is the language of business in Europe. And so you really have every young person speaks English to a certain degree. And most people in Europe who are rudimentary to okay English speakers want to practice their English, because many of them are taught the King's English, British English. And so they want to learn American slang. They want to learn American English. And so they're dying to talk to you. And so, you know, kids that go over, we really emphasize you need to learn 15 to 20 words of whatever language of whatever country you're going to, and then be ready, because they're all going to want to talk to you to obviously learn all of the American slang. And we really haven't had very many troubles with our kids when they've gone overseas not being prepared, just because we've really worked with them once the season is over so they can acclimate quickly when they do go.
All right, let's move on to another subject, the transfer portal. I ask every coach about this is, how does that make your job, I don't want to say a living hell, but how does that make your job more challenging, especially during periods where transfers can happen? And I have heard stories about coaches, like assistant coaches, just like being on it, like minute by minute, looking for pop-ups. And so what has that done to like your staff and the way you approach it?
We have a transfer portal czar.
Not you.
No, that's Vanessa Abel. She's addicted to that. She does check it every minute. Once we get into mid-January, she's literally checking it usually every couple hours in January. But when we get to February, we're always on it as a staff. We have utilized the transfer portal to our benefit. We've lost 3 players to the portal, and those were kids that I had to have some tough conversations with about what playing time was going to look like in their future. But on the other side of it, we've brought 8 players to our campus that were transfer portal kids, and 7 of them have signed with us. The only one that we missed on ended up going to TCU. And so we've been really fortunate, from Fatu Poye, who was a real good player for us, to Keandra Brown, who's with us now, and Yanni Townsend and others. You know, we really emphasize the academic opportunities at Duquesne University. And so the kids that we get in the portal typically are going to spend a year finishing their undergraduate degree. And then we really emphasize how important an MBA, Masters in Business Administration, can help them in their long-term future. And then going back to the previous conversation about, you know, we've had so much success with professional players, a lot of the kids that go in the portal want that type of opportunity also. So we think we have a really strong sell in those two things. And, you know, it'll be very interesting this year, because Meg McConnell will be finished with her student teaching, and I'm sure she's going to have a lot of people reach out to her. But, you know, Meg has expressed to me that, you know, I'm rolling with you. Wherever you're at, I'm at.
And don't go anywhere.
I think that says a lot to how we treat our players. And so, like, if you have a valued, trustworthy, loving relationship with your players, and it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows, but, you know, if your kids know that you really, truly care about you, they can go play professional basketball from Duquesne. They can get a really good degree that has great value from Duquesne. And so, you know, we don't lose a lot of kids.
So I have to talk about Meg, and in the preseason press conference, you with her, you said something that was just very fascinating, that she knows on a missed shot where the ball is going to go, and she positions herself. Elaborate on that, because at her size, for the rebounding she does, it's amazing.
It's math. She's able to calculate in her head the trajectory of the ball and where it's going to go off and the distance it's going to come off the rim.
But she's not sitting here like where I am announcing, where I can do that. She's running and she's playing defense. She's on the other side of the court. So she still does it in a helter-skelter mode, which is amazing.
While you sit, her feet are moving.
Yeah.
And that's the key to it. You know, and when you watch a lot of kids, especially on the women's side, when the rebounds are usually below the net. In men's basketball, the rebounds are below the rim for the most part, even at the highest levels. In women's Division I basketball, most rebounds are below the net. So she is able to recognize that and do that math, those calculations of where the ball is going off, but her feet never stop moving. And so she's a very unique kid. I don't know if I've ever had anyone like her before, and I don't know if I'll have anyone like her in the future. And her stats, in a sense, are a little bit down this year. We're asking her to do a little bit more, and we haven't supported her enough with giving her what we need from other players' perspectives. But, you know, again, we're 1-0 at this point in the Atlantic 10, and you know, we're hoping that we've turned the leaf and season looks good. We're also asking Meg to score the ball more also, and that's changed her game a little bit.
All right, couple more minutes. Tell me what got you inspired to run a marathon? And would you, not that you would do it again at your current age, but during the marathon, what was the toughest thing? Because from what I hear about marathon runners, it's not the physical thing of doing it, it's the mental part of finishing it.
Well, there's a lot of stories there, Barty.
That we could talk about on the air. Pick one.
Yeah. You know, I came over mile 16, and, you know, obviously the Pittsburgh Marathon's going to have hills, and I came over the hill in mile 16, and there was my 5-year-old at the time, Milan, with a big cardboard sign that said, "Suck it up, sissy." So I knew I had to finish at that point, but I hadn't trained at all, and I literally did not train at all, and I ran the marathon, and I finished dead last. To the point where dead
Mr.
last.
Mr. Irrelevant?
I was Mr. Irrelevant, and they were literally tearing down the end zone thing, you know, where you run through, and they were like, "This is such a good story." They took me in, they took all kinds of pictures, and, you know, I got my medal and everything, but it was, you know, surprisingly only one day of pain afterwards. You know, a good hot bath with Epsom salts, and I was fine after that. I like to challenge myself with crazy things like that. You know, I've driven across Eastern Europe by myself in the middle of the night for multiple days to go to basketball events. And, you know, when I'm done coaching, you know, I hope to hike the Appalachian Trail and do some other things like that. So, you know, maybe another marathon will be in my future.
I was going to say, after you did that, did you think about doing it the next year? Or did you say, nope, I accomplished what I needed to?
No, I've really wanted to do it again. You know, we got a little caught up with the COVID and the situation there for a couple years. I'm getting my health back, and I didn't have COVID or anything like that, but I'm getting my health back where I feel like I would be safe to run the marathon. And so, you know, there's an opportunity, probably not this May, but in the May of 25, that I may try to do something like that again.
Finally, women's basketball, it's blowing up. When I say that, I mean it's more popular than ever. We saw that last year. What have you seen from, you know, your team and traveling around the country that you have? Where do you think the women's game is right now?
Well, there's two things there. Last year in March Madness, Caitlin Clark made the casual. She stole it. She was the best player in March Madness, male or female. She's the best offensive player I've ever seen in women's basketball, ever. And that includes Cheryl Miller to Nancy Lieberman to Taurasi and everyone else. She makes the average Joe sit down and watch. With that being said, I think this year what I've seen more than anything is great parity. I think we see it in the Atlantic 10. I think we see it across the board outside of maybe the top 15, 20 schools who are a notch above. But there's tremendous parity from, like, basically 40 to about 120. I think there's a lot of teams that can beat anyone on any given day. And so I think that's going to make the Atlantic 10 really interesting this year. You know, we've had some teams in the non-conference with St. Joe's, VCU, and Davidson really having great records. But, you know, you can't sleep, I believe, on Dayton or us. I don't think you can sleep on Mason and Richmond. And it's going to be a really, really fun year this year in the Atlantic 10 and across the board, across women's basketball.
All right. We thank Dan Burt for our halftime.
The halftime program was brought to you today by the Bob Ross Auto Group on Loop Road in Centerville. Now let's head back to the arena for the second half of today's contest.